We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Husband, father, Elmo impersonator.
Yeah!
He wrote the arm and is currently writing its follow-up, the leg. He has everyone's phone number, even yours. He's MLB insider Jeff Passan of ESPN, only on the program.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now as we finish strong with Jeff Passan, Major League Baseball insider, ESPN's senior Major League Baseball insider. Jeff is brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. You can be seen by the same experts that your Kansas City Royals trust to care for their players. That's right. The official health care provider of the Royals. Get care from the experts the Royals trust to make the right call. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/royals. Jeff, thank you for the time. Welcome to the program. How are you, buddy?
I am well, Seren. How are you?
Good. We're excited about the draft, but also excited about our Kansas City Royals, who, are we still in a rain delay? We still are, so they still might finish this game.
I left.
So that's it? I'm out?
I was there. I was waiting to go into the clubhouse after this thing got banged after five innings. And then they took the tarp off, and I'm like, I got to go home. So I am on Knoll Avenue right now.
Fantastic.
That is absolutely fantastic. I love it. All right.
Dedication, boys. It's everything.
Listen, you're in a lot of ballparks and a lot of towns for a lot of nights, and if on this one you got to play, you can get home by ejecting early. More power to you, brother. Go see the family. That's enough. I'm with you. But what do we, first of all, the Royals are taking on some water. Alec Marsh gets hit on the comebacker. He was pitching great last night. We're starting to see their depth get tested. Is that what ultimately brings this team down?
You know, I'm not sure it's going to at this point. It's been really interesting being out at the park this week and hearing opponents talking about the Royals because, other major leaguers are generally the litmus test. I understand. I say, I don't place judgments on a team until the end of May. But hearing the way that the Orioles talked about the Royals and hearing the way that the Blue Jays talk about the Royals, they think they're legit. They think they're a legitimate team that's going to be in the thick of things by the end of the season. And I'll tell you, the last 2 days were very promising for this team because Toronto is a ball club that has playoff aspirations. It's a talented team. Team that has good pitching, and to see the Royals win a couple of close games in the fashion that they did, and to see James MacArthur close them out like that, they are going to be tested by injury, but the formula that they seem to have right now is working.
Well, and the best thing that could happen is for this game to get called. How long? What's the new protocol? The players, wanted day games to be able to get away and get to the next one, all those things. Didn't they bring up, and by the way, don't leave us sitting around for 9 hours in a rain delay. We're through five. What are we waiting on?
I think it's the fact that Toronto recognizes that this is a game that by the end of the season may actually mean something. Every game matters. And so, the Jays aren't going to be coming back here for the rest of the season, and I think they want to get another crack at it. We're through five innings, so if the rain had continued, I think that the game would have been called, but there might be a little pocket here where they can try and sneak in those last four innings.
And that is a little bit scary for the Royals in the sense that, because you just mentioned it, they've got to be without MacArthur tonight, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So That's where we start to get the test, right? Like, okay, this is where the depth starts to come in. You're playing night after night after night. And I'll give a lot of credit to how he used MacArthur two nights ago. He went two innings but needed only 20 pitches to do it. But that, to me, was like a Matt Quatrero night. You know, he did a fantastic job trailing 1-0 of saying, we've lost three in a row, four out of five. This game's not out of reach. I know he had 96 pitches, but he said Michael Wacha's coming out. And then he went bullpen, 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 including two innings from his closer to get the win. Like we didn't have much to grade him on, if anything, to grade him on last year. So far, the returns of it, he's pretty good at pressing the buttons, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know what? I talked with Matt Quatrero before the game today and said I was a little surprised to see MacArthur in there again last night. And Quatrero was surprised, too. But MacArthur came to him and was insistent and said, hey, I am good to go today. And it was, I'll tell you, Seren, I understand it was not against the top of the lineup, right? But it was against some established big league hitters, and the stuff was nasty. I mean, you know, starting Daniel Vogelbach off with a slider like backdoor on the outside corner, and finishing him off with like a front door two seamer that went from ball to strike within the last 15 feet of the plate. I mean, man. It's hard to hit. And the ability to do what James MacArthur did, which is one night not have your strikeout stuff, but be able to generate weak contact and get efficient outs and throw only 20 pitches to get six outs, and then the next night come back with, like, the nasty and make hitters look like fools. And get, you know, not just soft contact, but a lot of swing and miss, too. That is the kind of performance where you're like, yeah, this is the guy who I want to see in the ninth inning. To see him do what he did last night after a six-out save the night before, like, big cojones, walking off the mound feeling really good about himself.
Yeah, to kind of tag on to that, the pitch you're talking about looked like a little Wade Davis activity, but then at the end, the pitch he threw to Biggio to get him to end the game, Biggio didn't know whether to dump in his pants or swing, and that was tremendous pitch to so he has both ends of that stuff thing.
Yeah, and here's the thing. When you can land your off-speed stuff for strikes, Curtis, you're golden, because that allows you to then throw that off-speed stuff as waste pitches and in parts of the zone where guys are just not going to make any decent contact on it if they swing at it. And more often than not, there's going to be swing and miss involved there. But if you can command off-speed, you will be an elite pitcher. And to do that the way that he did last night, I mean, even one of the balls to Vogelbach early in the count that clipped the bottom of the zone, I think it was a curveball, which, you know, I was asking people around the clubhouse today what's his best pitch, and they kept going back to the curveball. To have not gotten the call on that and then come right back with just a different kind of nasty, it was pretty cool to see. And, I mean, have we, you know, I understand Wade Davis had some incredible seasons and Greg Holland had some incredible seasons, but since Wade Davis left, has there been anyone like that in the Royals bullpen who you look at and they're like, oh, man, that is gross? No, not really.
I'm trying to find, and I guess Baseball Reference changed their bottom of the player page where it used to tell you all their transactions. Now that's hidden someplace else. What was the deal for him? How did the Royals get him for the Phillies?
Yeah, he was in Philadelphia and just was, you know, he was sort of an afterthought, right?
Yeah, he came over on some little deal, but Baseball Reference was my go-to spot. I guess they've changed that. I'm trying to find where transactions are, but he came over. Was he just a claim off waivers?
Yeah, he was. I mean, it was a trade. He got DFA'd in May last year, and he came over for like a low level minor leaguer in cash. And you know, he was when he was with the Phillies, he was what so many pitchers are. A very talented arm in a very good frame, but couldn't put it all together. And that to me is where you see an organization turning around, Seren. It's when you can get somebody who has potential and polish that diamond. And you know, chip away all the rough edges so that the thing is sparkling. And that's what they've done with him. And the Royals, you know, over the last decades, the last decade or so, the Royals hadn't done a whole lot of that. And, you know, I give credit to the organization and player development and coaching that they've been able to find the best in James MacArthur and bring it out of him. And, you know, they've got themselves a closer now because of it.
According to Wikipedia, which is usually pretty good on things like this, he was traded in May of 23 in exchange for Junior Marin and cash consideration.
Yeah, but I think Jeff's right. He was DFA'd, and it was an oh, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, the Cole Reagans deal, this speaks to, you know, their ability to identify pitching in a lot of different ways. I mean, we're hoping that they can do it in the draft. Right? That would help. But, you know, they're taking guys that are in-house and making them better. They're getting guys from other places, making them better. Like, that's where you get excited that maybe a Rays-like pitching factory is being created here in Kansas City.
Yeah, and look, I'm not going to go there yet because this is just a couple of cases. But if you
were hoping. Can I hope? Can we hope,
no,
Jeff? Is it too early to hope?
Hey, would you let me finish my sentence, Seren? I was about to say, they've got their opening day starter and the guy who's closing games because of that. So, yes, it is absolutely worth hoping right now and, frankly, trending in that direction. I'm not going to say we're there yet, but, you know, once it's a fluke, potentially, twice you're on to something. You know, if we start seeing every year a guy who they've identified who others haven't and he turns into a productive piece of the pitching staff, you know, that piles up in a hurry because you're going to have those draft picks and those prospects who do pan out. And that's how a good pitching staff is put together, especially when you're going out and making canny free agent signings. And I think we can all say to this point, Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo in particular have worked out very, very well.
You're the only insider in all of sports that also, in addition to having great information, has strong opinions. So let me hope. Let me use the term hope that they're building a pitching factory.
Crusher of dreams.
Yes. Come on, Jeff. You're the best for a reason. Let me have that vision, for God's sake.
Because then we can say,
Hold on. Let me just say this. You're allowed, Seren, to have that vision, but you're having that vision like 2 weeks after saying, "Let's trade everyone," right?
No.
Yeah, kind of did.
No, I asked the question. Like every time I ask a question, you make it a declarative statement. If it goes to hell in a handbasket, would this team? What I asked 2 weeks ago. We're back to Shohei Ohtani and the parlor trick. If this team goes to hell in a handbasket, or if they're just kind of middling, should they be trading for the future like the Brewers? That was a question, and I actually
right.
would.
It was a question, but it could have been prefaced by, I hope that this is not the case, Jeff. But.
Well, if they're not contending, I actually hope they do make the trades.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right,
that's
you know?
Fair. It's so interesting to me, too, Seren, to see what the American League Central looks like right now. Because it's not just the Royals. I'm doing a story that's going to be running next week on, like, takeaways from the first month of the season. And I do this every year, and one of the categories is, like, which teams are real and which teams are really in trouble. And in the which teams are real, Cleveland's there, Detroit's there, and Kansas City is there. And the Guardians have not just the best record in baseball right now, but they've got the best run differential, too.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, they've also been playing nothing but bottom feeders. Tell Boston. They hadn't played, they'd only played, I think, six games against a team with a winning record before the Red Sox. So, you know, that's the test for them and the Royals, because the Twins have played nothing but above 500 teams. So I think there will be a little bit of a regression for everybody back towards the mean. But there's no doubt the Guardians are shockingly good. Let me give you another guy while we're throwing around accolades on the Royals. MJ Melendez defense. I mean, I'm stunned. Mad props to MJ Melendez, first and foremost, because he's the one who's done the work, but also to the Royals coaching staff and the organization for believing it could work, because it looked like it looked like Billy Butler in the outfield when it started. Now he looks like Alex Gordon running balls down into the gap, gunning guys out at the plate. Like, he looks, has he just gotten kind of lucky? Or is he really this good?
Pair that's elite is the arm. Like, he's got an arm. Do you remember the double play where Salvi, it looked like he got hurt?
Yes, he did get hurt.
Yes. That throw was ridiculous. Because he was going at an angle, but it was an angle drifting off to his left, right? And he righted himself to make an incredible throw, like a one-hop strike home. So to see him playing that kind of defense, and, you know, even like Kyle Isbell is very solid in center field. Like, the Royals outfielders aren't hitting a ton, but their defense has been one of the hallmarks of this team and its success. And I think that, you know, defense just all the way around the diamond on this team is very solid. I go back to, you know, we've been looking at the ERAs for the starting staffs, right? And Boston has sort of established itself as having the best starting staff so far. But there was a point at which the Red Sox had allowed 25 unearned runs when the Royals hadn't allowed one. Like, I don't think the Royals allowed their first unearned run until, like, 17 games into the season. And there's a little bit of luck involved in that, but there's also some skill to just play clean baseball. If you play clean baseball, it goes a really long way and gives you a greater margin for error with the bats and with the arms. If you have one of those, you know, areas of the game locked down the way that they have so far this season, then if another one is working, and it was the pitching early on, and then it was hitting for a little, you know, for a little stretch there, like, you're going to win some games. And the defense has been really solid all year.
Can I listen again? I threw the positives first, but the one thing they got to do is figure out he's an outfielder sooner, right? Like, if they'd figured that out, you know, 1-2 years into his, you know, time.
Yeah, see, Saran, I disagree with you on that, because...
Well, you're wrong.
No, I don't think I am, because I think Salvador Perez, lasting as long as he has with as much mileage on his body as there's been at catcher and continuing to get better, and, you know, his framing numbers this year are spectacular, and they've never been that before. The expectation that Salvador Perez at 34 years old is still going to be catching the way that he is right now is just not very realistic. And if you have a catching prospect who can hit the way that MJ Melendez does, you don't move him to the outfield early, because you're negating his trade value. And you're taking away the option of him potentially being there to catch if Salvador Perez isn't as good as he is. Now, when it's all said and done, yeah, it would have been nice in hindsight. But I think in the moment, looking at it that way, listen, the thing you're asking for this organization to do, right, is to get better at not just extracting value out of players, but at looking at them through a lens of value. And I'm sorry, but you can't look at a guy through a lens of value and suggest that he's going to be better to your team as a corner outfielder than he would as a catcher. That's just the risk.
Unless he can't catch. He is not in the outfield because Salvador Perez is still here. He can't catch.
I think when you draft guys out of high school as catchers, the development curve tends to take a little bit longer, and you give them a little bit more leeway.
Listen,
that's the rationale there.
Jeff, come on. You can't get clear to the big leagues and then figure it out. What the hell do you have four minor league teams for if somewhere along the way somebody can't go, by the way, not much of a catcher? Come on, Jeff. Four levels!
I understand. I think that at the time that he was coming up, the expectation that automated balls and strikes would be in the big leagues by now was a pretty... A pretty widely considered thing.
That's your best argument right there. That is a fair argument. I hear that. But, I mean, come on, listen. The goal is to figure out where guys are going to be their best and to do it as quick as possible so they can get as many reps to becoming the guy they're ultimately going to be. The bottom line is Alex Gordon can't play third. You got to figure that out pretty quick. The Brewers did it with Ryan Braun. Right? They figured it out and sent him out to the outfield. The Royals screwed around up here. Wasn't until they basically, I don't know that they ever figured it out as much as they took their own guy in a new regime and said, well, we got to try to make this work. Like, you got to be honest and be like, it ain't going to work at this. Let's get over there and make it happen. That's all.
If, you know, Seren, if this didn't happen elsewhere, like if it was the standard operating procedure to go like you're suggesting they should have gone, I would be more inclined to agree with you. But all I need you to do is look at Dalton Varsho. Dalton Varsho came up the same as MJ Melendez. He was a guy who had power, and he was a catcher, and he was athletic, and they were going to keep him there as long as they could. And it wasn't until he got traded to Toronto that he went full-time to the outfield. Even when he was with Arizona still, he was a catcher, right? He was a catcher slash outfielder, and they had started transitioning him there. Dalton Varsho went to left, was the best left fielder in baseball last year, and now with Kevin Kiermaier's injury has moved to center, and he's been an elite outfielder this year. He has learned on the fly a lot better than MJ Melendez has, and maybe the fault in this situation was the Royals assuming that his athleticism was going to translate a little bit more quickly than it has. That's something. If you're looking back, 2020 hindsight, that's something that they should have done to start sooner. But I don't think it's out of the question to handle him the way that they did, because other teams have handled similar prospects in a similar fashion, and the outcomes have simply been a little bit better.
We'll move off this here. I'll just say, the fact that other people screwed things up is not an excuse for you. You're paid millions of dollars. Hundreds of thousands for people in the front office. You're in the get-it-right business. It's professional baseball. This isn't about little Louie wants to give it a shot behind the dish, and his mommy's always dreamt of it, and they bought him a new set of catching gear, and he's in the third grade. Screw that. It's professional baseball. You're in the get-it-right business. And all I need, if you want to talk about young and athletic and Bryce Harper, they did not keep him behind the dish. They moved him out.
Yep.
And there's lots of other guys that they did that as well. So, you know, but we'll, you know, it's fine. I just don't think you should get clear to the big leagues as a catcher and then go, Mike Sweeney, wrong. How does he get clear to the big leagues before somebody goes kind of stone-handed?
Because MJ Melendez was a better catcher than Mike Sweeney ever was and was a better catcher than Bryce Harper ever was.
Well, the numbers, the analytic numbers said he was the worst guy that had ever grabbed a mask the one year he was back there. Worst framer, worst at pass blocking balls. Like, the numbers were off the charts atrocious.
Yeah, I never, for whatever it's worth, when he was coming up, I never heard he was great. I also never heard that he was awful. So I'm strictly going on what Scout said. Their eyes are much better than mine, and I can trust them only so much. And, you know, it didn't prove great in the end, but they also weren't stubborn enough to stick with him there because of that positional value that you have. They did make that transition eventually.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I think another example is Craig Biggio, by the way. You know, like, there have been guys who have made mid-career moves from catcher to different positions on the field, and they have been successful. So,
yeah, no, there are. There's a couple of them. Usually, though, you hear about it like, well, you know, he started in the organization as a catcher. Oh, yeah.
Right.
And in A-ball, they switched him. But I hear you. Listen, enough about that. I want to ask you real quick about the umpires. You know, Max Scherzer wants a relegation system, which I'm all for. I kind of dig relegation all around. Is this just, look, NFL referees are the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. They're terrible. They're terrible. Baseball umpires are better, except for when we get to replay. They have no idea what they're doing on replay. I don't think the actual calling of everything else, although the balls and strikes, just get to the digital strike zone. Let's go. But otherwise, I don't think they're as bad. And even on the calling balls and strikes, with as difficult as it is, they're not as bad as the NFL refs are at, like, everything. So, like, people are ripping the basketball refs now. I don't think they're that bad. Is it just like the thunderous, you know, roar of NFL officiating, how bad it is? Every athlete in every sport is now saying, well, now's the time to strike.
No, I don't think that's what it is. Here's what I think it is. I think it is the perception of arrogance with baseball umpires that bothers people. And I think the perfect example of that was there for us this week. I imagine you saw this, Seren. For those who didn't, Aaron Boone was chirping at Hunter Wendelstedt, who was behind the plate. This was five pitches into the Yankees game a few days ago. And Hunter, we caught this on like a microphone that was near the field, said, "Don't say anything else or you're gone." And so Boone was just sitting there looking at his fingernails in the dugout, and a fan behind him said something, and the umpire thought that it was coming from the Yankees dugout and ran Boone from the game for it. After the game, Hunter Wendell said the umpire then doubled down on this idea and suggested that what he had heard came from the opposite end of the dugout, which, you know, the notion that something came from the opposite end of the dugout after the umpire had told the manager, "Don't say anything," is quite unlikely. And the possibility that it came at the exact same time as the fan chirping from the stands is near impossible, right? So maybe I leave open the possibility that what Hunter Wendell said is saying is true, but he didn't even go back and look at the replay. He didn't even go back and see that the fan had said something right before he ejected Boone for it. And there was just this sense of arrogance throughout the whole thing that rubs people the wrong way and magnifies the mistakes that are made. And there are going to be mistakes that are made when guys are as nasty pitching as they are right now. I don't like seeing balls called as strikes. I don't like seeing strikes called as balls. I recognize that the human eye, as wonderful as it is and as good as the umpires are at what they do, and they're pretty damn good at calling balls and strikes, they're not perfect. But to have them walking around almost infallibly and taking control of the game the way that they do, that's what rubs people the wrong way, and that's why I think their reputation is every bit as bad as the referees in the other sports.
We're talking to Jeff Passan, our Major League Baseball insider, the best in the business. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care. They're at 435 and all in Overland Park. Weekdays, they're open 8 to 7. Saturdays, 8 to 2. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. Jeff, I'll start you with this. The best team in baseball not named the Braves is who?
Baltimore Orioles.
No doubt that's what it'll be at the end?
Believe so. I like the Dodgers a lot, too. They're going to be fine. But I mean, you saw the Orioles. You've seen them two series now. They are really good.
Yeah, they are. The Chiefs should draft who tonight?
I wish I knew the tackles well enough to know who's going to be there at the end of the first round. And I know they need another wide receiver, but I would go left tackle.
Okay, I'll take that as a solid answer. All right, Salvador Perez home run total will be what? He's on pace for 45 right now. As much as you try to run him down and tell me, oh, he's not going to the Hall of Fame, what do you got to say now?
33.
33? Okay. He's pretty good. He's inching up there. If he goes 33, better framing and all that right now.
What do you mean run him down? I'm not running him down. I'm just saying compared to guys who are in the Hall of Fame now, the credentials are not quite there yet.
I'm just saying
he sucks. I'm screwing my word. No, you're putting words in my mouth.
I know I'm the only guy who ever says he's any good, but...
You are so full of crap. Unbelievable.
I just always love that. There's somebody I heard that, you know, was like, just the most obvious thing, like, oh, I know nobody thought the Orioles were going to be good, but, you know, like, no, everybody did.
We've all seen them.
Finally, the Royals make the playoffs, yes or no?
No, but I think they're going to be over 500 now.
Okay.
So they will, I think, let's put it this way. I don't know that they make it at the end of the day. I do think there will be meaningful September baseball in Kansas City this year, which is a pretty awesome thing to say.
Yeah, I agree. It's an amazing thing to say. Let's be honest. Jeff Passan, you're the man. Great stuff. Read all his great work there at ESPN.com. Watch him and his fabulous mane of hair on the Sports Center. Jeff, we appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Good hair day today, too, Petra. See you, buddy.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear.
Alright, we roll along with our need to know, the things you absolutely need to know. One is first and foremost that we will be covering the NFL draft wall to wall, gavel to gavel, here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We will stay at our post. We'll take a quick break to go get some refreshments. And Mark Boerichter will join us, and we will give you tag team coverage along with ESPN Radio and ESPN Television of the first round of the NFL draft. So we'll be here all the way up until the Chiefs pick or trade out of that pick, and certainly all the way through the first round of the NFL draft. So keep it locked right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Live. That's number one.
Yes, absolutely. Whatever you need to know, the minute you need to know it.
That's right. Number two, you need to know that our need to know is brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing, online at eastonroofing.com. Easton Roofing has you covered. Home, yes. Business, yes. Easton Roofing is Kansas City's best. No payment collected until you're 100% satisfied. Find them online on eastonroofing.com. We're just about an hour and 18 minutes away from the draft getting started. Of course, our draft coverage, Curtis, brought to you by
Hollywood Casino, Green Light Dispensary, and Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks.
Great place to watch.
It is a great place to watch. Yes, I agree. You need to know the Royals have placed Alec Marsh on the 15-day injury list with a right elbow contusion. He left last night's game after taking a line drive off that elbow. Will Klein has been recalled from Omaha and will be active reliever for the Kansas City Royals. He's set to be the 999th player in Royals history whenever he enters the game.
Yes. Not quite to 1,000, but... Kurt says we're on watch. He's number 999.
We will get there.
We have Mr. 99 coming up to cover draft, and he'll be Mr. 999 when
he goes
in.
That is correct. The 1,000th player. Who do you think it'll be?
Oh, I couldn't even hazard a guess.
Who's it going to be?
I honestly couldn't. I have to look at the board. I couldn't even begin to contemplate.
James Bolin?
Or Jonathan Bolin?
Jonathan Bolin.
Be nice.
He's got a shot at it.
I hope it's not for a little while.
Was Logan Porter up last year?
Let me see.
Catchers get hurt.
Yeah,
so I was thinking who the next catcher would be.
Logan Porter.
Can't remember if he got a cup of coffee last year or not.
No, I don't see any stats, no.
Okay. It's a possibility as well. Place your wagers right now. Royals still in a rain delay right now. 2-1. They lead the Toronto Blue Jays trying to win a four-game series. They've taken 2 of 3.
Winning a four-game series when you lose game one couldn't be a tougher task other than sweeping. But they need some time.
Salvador Perez hit his seventh home run today. Cole Reagans, 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 4 Ks on the day. He no doubt is done if they do play again.
I mean, he's not Wade Davis, for crying.
Jeff said they were taking the tarp off. Is that? I mean, it does not look good.
Yeah, they did take it off. It doesn't look...
Did they take it off?
It's a touch muddy. They've got their work cut out for them to get it back to playable, but the tarp's off.
So we'll see. We'll see if they get it going.
That'd be nice.
After this, they head out on the road to...
Detroit. And they better get out quick because they got a noon game against Detroit tomorrow.
Well, that's why I'm surprised they're screwing around this long already with the
game. Got through 5.
Yeah, just... Come on.
What are we waiting on here, people?
To quote Hank Stram, or Vince Lombardi, what the hell's going on out here?
What the hell's going on out here?
NBA playoffs tonight, Cavs at Magic, Game 3. That's at 6 o'clock on the NBA Network, where the Cavs and Magic have lived the entire series.
Yes, and will continue.
Cleveland's up 2-0. The Magic get their first shot at a home game. They're 2.5-point favorites tonight. Knicks at Sixers, Game 3. Knicks up 2-0 on Philly after a meltdown by the Sixers in Game 2. Philly at home now, 5.5-point favorites. You took a big inhale and like you had something to say.
No, I'm thinking, I don't want to take. Yeah. What do you think? They're going to rebound?
No. The Knicks.
Was Tuesday just so, or the last, game two just so gut wrenching you can't come back? The Nova Knicks is where they're now.
Knicks
being
and the points. And I'll definitely take me some Nuggets at the Lakers. Oh. Game 3, 9 o'clock on TNT. Denver up 2-0 in that series. Lakers, 1.5-point favorites.
10 straight. Blow a 20-point lead.
If you get...
You get a point and a half?
Yeah, you get points while taking the team that's streaking.
That's
just an auto bet.
Yes, please.
It's an auto bet. You do that every time, you're going to make some money.
Lakers by 15. Because this seems too easy, doesn't it? And
yeah.
That seemed like, oh, that's when you don't go.
The Bucks could be without two of their top three players when they resume their first-round series against the Pacers tomorrow night. Chris Middleton has a sprained right ankle, kept him from practicing today, puts his status in question for Game 3. The Bucks already played the first two games without Giannis, who has a left calf strain. Good night, Milwaukee.
See you later.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
But don't see anything. No shot.
Possibly without two players coming off a loss, going on the road. Pretty high hill to climb.
Yeah. So, yeah, don't get it.
You were digging you some Celtics. You really feel that's about as. I mean, I just reasoned to. I'm not saying it's crazy to, but.
Well, I do think they got a bad draw in catching the Heat because Eric Spoelstra's badass.
I know. Playoff, and they don't have playoff Jimmy, but they got playoff Eric.
They got 53% from three the other night.
I think the Celts will probably win in 6.
Yeah.
But it's scary to have to play the Heat.
Yeah, just nobody wants to see them at all. Doesn't matter what the record is.
No.
Because that guy, you're going to have to play 48. You're not running them out of the building. Get up 10, they're coming back at you at some point.
Yes.
Byer or Harrell is going to hit some buckets.
We will take a break. Our NFL draft coverage will get started with ESPN at 6 o'clock. The Kicker is coming up next here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, your home for everything that is the National Football League.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue Burnt End of the Hour answer in the common draft era. How many wideouts have been the number one overall pick?
Irving Fryer, Keyshawn Johnson, Megatron went second. That can't be it, can it? I'm gonna say 3.
It's 2.
Wow.
Irving Fryer, Keyshawn Johnson.
It's 2. Holy cow! Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Get you some Joe's tonight. Great thing to grab on your way home. Joe'sKC.com. You can order it on your phone. They got the app. That's super easy to use as well. Joe'sKC.com for the best barbecue in the world. Get you some Joe's tonight and enjoy the NFL draft. Get you some Joe's this weekend. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, 47th Mission, 119th Strangline, at 117th and Row. You can send it anywhere in the country as well at joeskc.com. The Rams are said to be trying to make a move into the top 10. They haven't had a first-round pick in 6 years. So they finally got a first-round pick. And what are they going to do? They're going to trade some future first-round picks to make this first-round pick all it can be.
I don't get it.
What do you think they're going after?
Stafford's replacement.
You think so?
Maybe.
They've got 11 picks in this year's draft.
What were they really bad at?
If it's not a quarterback, Byron Murphy replace Aaron Donald, retired. A left tackle they want. They made the offensive line a lot better last year. I don't know. Interesting. All right. We have given our dream scenarios. Think of yours. We'll see what the Kansas City Chiefs end up doing later tonight. We'll see if they're bold and daring and move way up to make a move for a tackle or a wide receiver. Those would seem like the most obvious places that the Chiefs might look up to add to the equation. We've made our dream scenarios public. That was in hour number one. You can get that on the podcast at 810WHB.com. We'll be with you, myself, Curtis, Adam, and Mark Boerichter joins us from now until the end of the first round. And we'll also give you a lot of the ESPN coverage as well. Enjoy the NFL draft.